This is Day to Day. I'm Madeline Brand. Some people credit Bill McKibben with kicking off the climate change debate with his provocative 1989 book, The End of Nature. Now, 16 years later, McKibben returns to the environmental themes of that first book in his latest work, Wandering Home. The author spoke earlier about what we can learn from his home turf, the landscape surrounding Lake Champlain, with Day to Day's Alex Chadwick.
Bill, let me ask you to begin by defining this region, which you do begin by sort of describing how you think this is a region, though no one else has quite defined it that way.
I think that the land on either side of Lake Champlain, the New York shore and the Vermont shore, constitute really one of the world's premier regions, this combination of the great, great wilderness of the Adirondacks, the biggest wilderness in the East, and then just on the other side of the lake, this pastoral landscape that's agricultural Vermont. Together, they form a whole that has all kinds of lessons or ideas that I think are of enormous help thinking about the rest of the world.
You write so much about how we use resources wisely and foolishly. The lessons that you find in walking through this region, what are they?
More than anything else, it's that this is a place where, to some degree, people still think locally. The number of abandoned dairy farms that tried to compete in a kind of world milk market and failed and are now being taken up by people trying other smaller scale local kinds of agriculture, learning to grow wheat and barley for the local brewery and the local bakery. Another is really what you might call the sort of long New England tradition of cooperation and compromise. You know, this is still an area where the political, important political decisions are made at town meeting. And then in the Adirondacks especially, that's a place where people have learned to leave things alone. It's not like Yellowstone with a fence around it. People live in and around the wilderness and make their living in somewhat the same place nature does. But that ability to just sort of take a step back, be a little smaller in the world, is one that I think is, paramount.
But do these lessons in localism apply widely enough to be of real value in places like, say, Los Angeles or much of the rest of the country, where what you see on the surface is the real success of globalism, the success of economies of scale, of corporations that have big stores that market things at the lowest possible price?
To some extent, of course, every place is very different and its own ideas about what a community should look like. But I think what we've begun to sense is that the limits of the usefulness of that scale have been reached, you know. If a new Walmart comes to your town, it destroys more jobs than it creates. It lowers the wage scale. Yeah, you can get a lot of cheap stuff, but in the end, your community is not as healthy as it was beforehand. That's why, you know, voters in this part of the world at town meeting this past year passed a set of laws to try to keep those sort of big box stores further at bay. It's not that we don't have any. We have some. We're part of the economy. You know, there's McDonald's and there's car dealerships. But on a relative spectrum, the move towards economies and communities that offer not just sort of more local control, but which threaten to make sense, where you can apprehend where it is that the things you use in your life come from, that you know the stories of what your food is about, who grew it and how, those sort of things.
Here's an example from Wandering Home. I don't recall which community this occurs in, but you walk through a town where the garbage collection is done by a man who has a team of these big draft horses, and he's going around through town with a wagon pulled by these horses collecting everyone's trash.
The beauty of that story is they didn't do it to be cute or even to be environmental. They did it because he was the low bid for the contract.
He's the low bidder.
It was cheaper to do it that way. And of course, one of the useful things about Vermont is a continuing Yankee frugality, not to mention cheapness.
16 years ago, your book, The End of Nature, was among the first to predict and talk about the dire outcomes of the global warming crisis. There have been all kinds of, I think, increasing attacks in the last couple of years on the idea of global warming as a serious threat. How do you think your book stands now?
The science, in fact, has not changed very much. If anything, it's gotten worse. The scientific consensus is now extremely strong about what's happening to the planet and how quickly it's happening and how devastating it'll be unless we learn other ways to fuel our lives. The only place where there's controversy surrounding it, really, is within the Beltway in Washington, where people have managed to convince themselves that if they, you know, close their eyes and stamp their heels, the laws of chemistry and physics won't apply. One of the points of this book was to try to show that there are ways that we can organize our lives that allow us to live not only with less impact on the planet, because that's important, but with more pleasure, because that's important too.
There are indeed essays coming out now, a debate in the environmental community, whether the whole idea of environmentalism is passé, because I think not enough environmental activists have been talking about how to make life good.
For a very long time, the environmental movement's been working off the kind of energy stored up by the explosion of Rachel Carson's book, Onto the Landscape, and all the things that followed it. And that sort of model has been, and in many ways continues to be, very effective. Here's a threat. Let's meet it. Here are the technical steps we need to take, so on and so forth. That works fine for dealing with particular technical problems. It doesn't work so well for having to make the very basic changes at the root of our economy that dealing with global warming demands. We've got to be able to show that, you know, the world where your energy comes from the windmill on your ridgetop and the solar panel on your roof is at least as sweet as the one where energy comes from 10,000 miles away and you have to maintain a $400 billion a year Pentagon in order to keep it flowing.
Bill McKibben's latest book is Wandering Home, A Long Walk Across America's Most Hopeful Landscape, Vermont's Champlain Valley and New York's Adirondacks. It's part of the Crown Journeys series. Bill McKibben, thank you.
Alex, thank you. Have a good day.
And that interview by Day Today's Alex Chadwick.